Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, community, leadership, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We are also so fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share their industry and life expertise. Today, we got a full house. I need to catch my breath here because there's a lot of people. So we have Jesse Rausch, did I say that correctly? VP of Health Strategies with First Coast American Heart Association. Dr. Robert Kim, cardiac electrophysiologist, mouthful, with ASHI Heart and Vascular.
That's correct.
I said that correct. He's going to come on the second half, talk about some cool stuff with the heart. And then we have Donna Wagner, VP of Critical Care, Neurovascular Care, and Cardiovascular Care.
Correct.
Goodness gracious, that's a full house. We have some other representatives from the American Heart Association. We have swag everywhere. Let's party. Please, you two talk while I catch my breath. Introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Jesse Rausch. I'm the VP of Health Strategies for the First Coast American Heart Association and happy to be here.
All right.
And I'm Donna Wagner. I am an RN for 33 years, most of that time in the cardiovascular space, so very passionate about the topic.
You guys have big hearts. Is that fair to say? There's a lot of cheesy heart jokes this whole time.
I'm excited for that.
So we have a representative from HCA and the American Heart Association. A lot of big stuff coming up. You want to start with the Heart Walk to begin with?
Absolutely, yes. So we would love for the community to come out and join us for our Heart Walk on Saturday, October 4th.
Saturday, October 4th.
Yes.
Doors open at 7:30, walks at 9:30.
Yep.
She's checking with her team in the corner.
Smart play.
I'm like, yes. And people can sign up and register a team at firstcoastheartwalk.org.
I love that you keep checking your backup.
My job is the health strategies. So Christina's really the expert on the heart walk. But
we'll go to that in a second. I do want to emphasize October 5th. It's a Saturday. Doors open at 7:30, Jacksonville Fairgrounds. October 4th. What did I say?
October the 4th. You said the 5th. It's
well, we're butchering this. That's what we do on this show. We can put in the notes
He's
the actual
date. No big deal. What does it matter? If you show up on the 5th, you can still walk, but we won't be there.
We won't be there, yeah.
10-4. 10-4. 10-4. It's easy.
10-4. 10-4. That's easy. That's smart.
So the Heart Walk's a big deal. What is VP of Health Strategies? What does that mean?
So within my role, I collaborate with local community organizations and safety net clinics to implement evidence-based strategies to improve population health and nutrition insecurity, tobacco cessation, maternal health, CPR, and hypertension. And so it's a lot of words to say that I do a lot of collaboration with our local community centers, including food pantries, our safety nets, our healthcare systems, to just try to make sure that people live longer and healthier lives.
Would you say you help make the community healthier?
Yes.
That's a win.
I agree.
When you say community partners, are you referring to HCA?
Absolutely, yes. They're one of our wonderful partners locally.
Help me understand this relationship.
Sure. So we're so thrilled to partner with you all for the Heart Walk. So Reed Hammond is our CEO.
And shout out, Reed.
Shout out to my boss. And he is
earlier today.
Yes, he is the chairperson for the Heart Walk. So extra excited this year to be a part of it. But we have been participating for many years. We always try to get a challenge going in the hospital to raise money for it as well. I think I was updated today. We're up to 37,000. Uh-huh. Our goal this year is to get to, I think, 70. We got to 50 last year. We do bake sales. We have people hand making soap and selling it. We do all sorts of cool things to help to raise that money. So
in addition to that, we also work with HCA Memorial. They provide doctors to us to do doctor talks in the community to get health education out into the community. We have recently worked with them to have them come out to the New American Welcome Center to educate the clients at that center. And so we do a lot with their providers as well, not just the Heart Walk. And so it is a year-round collaboration with them.
The American Heart Association, I'd be shocked if people haven't heard of it. But
they confuse us with American Red Cross quite a bit.
Well, I can see also AHA is the American Hospital Association, mm-hmm. right? Does that sound familiar?
Yes,
there's two AHAs.
Correct. That's why we can't really refer to it as AHA anymore.
I still do.
We all do.
So what's the difference with the First Coast? Are you just, you function independently or you're under an umbrella of the American Heart Association?
So we have 200 markets nationally. And so, First Coast, the Jacksonville area, is one of our markets. We have, I'd say, three or four in the state. And then so other states also have their market. So we all operate under the National Center of the American Heart Association.
What falls under the First Coast? Is that the Big Five?
Yep. Baker, Clay, Nassau, St. John's, and Duval County.
We have to say Duval like they do for the... You're going to do it.
Do it.
Yeah. Wait, did I do better than the new coach? Didn't he do it? And everyone roasted him.
We love Northeast Florida here. This show really does kind of put an emphasis on Northeast Florida. Some people are from outside of the state. But so HCA, do you have a favorite, right? Cardiology, cardiovascular, neurovascular, and critical care, which is like, oh, I love this as a nurse.
I love them all equally. You know, as a mom, you have to say that.
Yeah.
Exactly. But if I could only pick one, I think cardiac has been the continuous through my 33-year career.
She's just saying that because I'm sitting
right here. Of course she is.
We know your audience, people.
And you were... You were a hands-on nurse for, you said, 13 years? You've been
17. So I was at the bedside for 17 years. I did open heart recovery. I did critical care. I did started in med-surg, stepped down, did all the things. I've been a nursing professor, a clinical nurse specialist. And then I broke my back, and I could not do the lifting, pulling, pushing anymore.
Wow.
So that pushed me into leadership. So I've done many different roles in nursing leadership.
Can you share how you broke your back? Or is that none of our business?
No, it was very not glamorous. So my stepdaughter and I were sleigh riding down a hill, and we hit a bump, and we both landed on my back. And that was enough to give me a compression fracture of L4, L5. Yeah, it hurt. So that's my Achilles heel. And as much as I tried to push through, you know, nurses were lifting, pulling, pushing constantly. Yeah.
I would tell people you were wrestling an alligator. That's more glamorous.
Oh, I do like that.
Yeah.
Especially here in Florida.
There's a lot of gator fans too.
I'm going to take us off track for 2 seconds, but my son the other day asked me, hey mom, do you know that Dwayne The Rock Johnson wrestles? And I was like, how do you think he got famous? I was just like, I can't.
He will always be The Rock, the wrestler.
Yeah. I was like, that's how he started.
Yes. But for their generation, he's like Moana and different things.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
So the leadership side of nursing, what do you enjoy about that?
So I like really seeing change, right? So healthcare is hard. It's hard out there. It's hard for everybody. It's hard for the patients trying to get care. It's hard for the nurses and the healthcare deliverers and the doctors trying to give care. So I love being the catalyst that can come in and say, how can we make it easier for all and better for all of those people?
I love that. What changes have you seen in the last 20 years that have been good changes?
So technology can be a great change. So there are things that, you know, they laugh when I sound like the old grandma, you know, and even just taking your nursing boards, right? I took mine on paper over 2 days, didn't get my results for 3 months.
With a number two pencil.
Exactly. I was a charge nurse before I was even an RN because they put me in charge before I even knew if I passed my boards. Now people take them and they know that day that they're, you know, they've passed. Same with the technology for caring for patients. So I am that old that we used to have to dial our IVs and count the number of drips and
those
figure that
are
out.
Impressive now.
Now you literally just put what the drug is and what the appropriate dose, and there's guardrails built in so that if you put something that does not look right, it will tell you, wait a minute, stop and think about this.
Do you think that makes you sharper than someone that's maybe new to the industry?
I don't know about sharper so much as just if all else failed, right? If everything goes down.
I want you in the room,
I could
right?
still do that.
Yeah.
Well, we laughed the other day. A doctor had written a note and now everything's electronic, right? So nurses don't have to read doctor's notes anymore, but we all had to decipher the doctor's notes. And so they were like, what does this even say? I was like, gimme. And I was able to figure it out right away.
Pharmacists are probably also equally as
correct.
happy
exactly.
with that.
Correct. So,
I just thought of a funny healthy or not healthy we're going to hit later. So I'm going to ask, what are some negative things you've seen change in the last 20 years? And then we'll pivot back to the American Heart Association and your industry also.
Sure. So for our industry, I think, you know, regulation is supposed to give you more safety, but the more rules and charting and everything you throw on practitioners, exactly, the harder it becomes and the less you feel you're at the bedside. So when I used to be able to just write my paper notes, I could do that while I sat with my confused patient, right? I worked nights, patients were confused, they'd get into trouble. So I'd bring them a pile of washcloths and I'd tell them, can you fold those for me? Because if they don't get folded, I'll get in trouble. Sure, honey. And they'd fold the washcloths. across while I wrote my notes. You can't do that anymore because everything's on computers and there's so many clicks you have to do.
Isn't also the time that providers get to spend with their patients? So I used to be director of volunteers for Volunteers in Medicine Jacksonville, which is a free clinic that serves
great organization.
Working uninsured. Yeah, I love Jennifer Ryan, my former boss.
She was on here a couple months ago. Shout out.
But what they what they do for patients, their uninsured patients, is they guarantee that patients get 30 minutes with their providers. And that was such a huge benefit for not only the patients, but even the providers that I would bring on as volunteers. They would be so happy about that because a lot of them don't feel like they get enough time with patients anymore.
Yeah. You'd mentioned something. I think of EMRs, they're great, but they're kind of a double-edged sword, right? You have to document the whole time. You get to make eye contact with the patient and really engage. But the other thing is the bureaucracy that comes with that. If you miss a checked box, what's the reimbursement look like? Exactly. Is the care proper just by not clicking the box?
But it's death by clicks sometimes.
Death by clicks. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a t-shirt. So back to the First Coast American Heart Association. How long have you been with the organization?
I've been with AHA for 3 years.
3 years. Have you seen any big changes in 3 years that you recognize?
I think that our community is just recognizing the social determinants of health and the different things outside of the clinic setting that really do influence somebody's health, like where they live, work, if their neighborhood is safe enough for them to walk around in, what food they have access to, whether it means money-wise or geographic location. And so I think a lot of our community organizations are recognizing the importance of social determinants of health and making sure that they address some of those needs, not just the clinical care that somebody will receive.
I think transportation's in there also, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So SDOH, I'm not saying it's a buzzword in healthcare, but it's growing in popularity and dollars invested because I think long-term it makes a bigger impact than just here, take this pill.
And I think people are also recognizing how big of a role nutrition plays in just overall health. A part of my role with AHA is to work with our community pantries to provide them commercial refrigeration. And people sometimes wonder what the connection to the American Heart Association is there. And I have to remind them that if our pantries are not serving the healthier food options, that of course is not going to lead to positive health outcomes for the people that use pantries. And so we want to make sure that our local food pantries have access to the healthier or can store the healthier food options for their clients, because there's absolutely a connection between nutrition and security and an increase in risk for heart disease, heart attack, and stroke.
Diabetes,
and all of that stuff. Yeah.
What are some of the items that people would be eating at a pantry like that?
So if a pantry doesn't have enough refrigeration, they'll be eating a lot of that shelf stable, highly processed, highly, lots of sodium, lots of fat, stuff that survives on the shelves and isn't necessarily, the fresh produce, the fresh meats, and just lean proteins and stuff.
Gotcha. Food items that would survive the apocalypse.
Exactly. Right? Twinkies.
Twinkies, correct. Everyone goes to Twinkies. So that's kind of a good transition. The American Heart Association has their Big Eight. Who has them memorized? I've got them printed out here. I'll read through them real quick. So eat better, be more active, quit tobacco, get healthy sleep, manage weight, control cholesterol, manage blood sugar, manage blood pressure. Those are the Big Eight according to the American Heart Association's website. The first thing on that, eat better, that helps check the other boxes.
The cholesterol, the sugar, all of that stuff.
So again, both of you, when you say eat better, can you elaborate? The easiest way I say it is just do your best to eat real food, not processed food. Right. Anything else you'd add to eat
just
better?
Fresh, healthy foods when you can. Of course, canned and frozen is still good. I think people think that there's a huge difference in fresh and canned, canned and frozen vegetables and fruits. So as long as you're checking sodium content and sugar content, they can actually be very similar. And so just having people understand the importance of getting enough fruits and vegetables, as well as those lean proteins, and being a little bit more moderated when it comes to red meats and desserts and all of those kinds of
things. All the things. If you look at the Big Eight, to me, like the one that jumps out to me is be more active. Mm-hmm. The Heart Walk's a great example of that. Just walking. So what are some other recommendations or things that just to be more active, I immediately go to walking?
Well, I mean, I just got a walking pad for my desk. And so it's been a lot easier to get steps in and throughout my day. But even just setting a timer every few hours to get up away from your desk and move around is huge. We sit a lot within our roles. I think most people do are very sedentary because of that. And so just trying to incorporate natural movement within your day doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a strict exercise regimen or effort if you can just get up and move around more often.
My cousin is a PT, and he said to me, sitting is the new smoking because it is as impactful to move around as it is to stop smoking. And find something you love to do. So walking is easy, right? Because you don't need special equipment. You don't need to spend money. You can just go. But I Zumba. I love to dance. It's like therapy.
Do it.
That is like my worst nightmare. Dancing in front of people. No, thank you.
I know. But for me, I'm more concentrating on, am I on the right foot? The time goes quickly, and it's great. If you told me I had to go lift weights for an hour, I'd not
do it. And that's mine. That's what I like to do. We're gonna do a field trip.
Exactly. So find what it is you do like to do and do it. It can be whatever it is that brings you joy that just gets you moving.
I love that. What's the lowest barrier to entry? Right. So someone who maybe is not active and wants to be, what's the lowest barrier to entry? I think like it's walking. Right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe it's running. I do want to talk about rucking in a second. That's suddenly exploded in popularity, but it's just essentially adding weight while you walk. Pickleball has exploded.
Love it. It's like giant ping pong, and I'm good at ping pong, so.
Giant ping pong.
It really is.
People are serious about their pickleball.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But not everyone wants to lift weights. Not everyone wants to do CrossFit. Right. Not everyone wants to Zumba. I do, Trey, we should do a Zumba class together. That'd be very
I would love to see it.
I'd do it. Why not?
Yeah, we would do it. Let's see here. So sleep. What about sleep? That's a big
major
one.
Well, you think about when you're not sleeping, you're not going to be locked in on the other stuff necessarily. You're too tired to go exercise. You're too tired to maybe be a little bit more intentional about your diet for the day or things like that. I know when I'm tired, I don't want to exercise and I want to eat whatever is going to make me feel better at that moment.
And physiologically, and Dr. Kim, I'm sure, could back me up on this, the only time your body truly heals is when you're resting. So if you don't sleep, your body's not getting rid of that inflammation and all those other little problems that can build up over time. So
I look at this is just me, right? Three pillars that I have to support my entire life. It's exercise, diet, and sleep. Mm-hmm. It's not complicated, but if I eat well and sleep and don't exercise, I feel great. If I work out and sleep well but eat like crap, I feel pretty good. If I eliminate sleep from that, it's game over. Yeah. Everything else is in the garbage. So let's both sides here. What are you excited for? First Coast American Heart Association, any big things you're excited for in the future? Mm-hmm. And then same question about HCA Health, some upcoming things.
Well, of course, the walk on Saturday, October 4th, right?
10-4.
But in addition to that, we have a really exciting work that we're doing in the community impact space. And so right now we are prioritizing addressing disparities when it comes to cardiac arrest survival as well as bystander CPR rates. And so we are in the position right now to be collaborating with 20 local organizations to provide AED funding as well as CPR certification funding to address some of those disparities. And so we are working with our local faith-based organizations and community centers until December 2026 to address those issues. But we're always in the nutrition and security space, working with our food pantries to donate equipment. We're working with our safety net clinics and local pregnant women to donate blood pressure cuffs. Unfortunately, we know that hypertensive disorders are a leading cause of pregnancy-related death, and so we want to make sure our local expecting moms have blood pressure cuffs to monitor blood pressure in between their appointments, but also we work to donate healthy lunches to some of our pregnant ladies at our Duval County Health Department's prenatal support groups, and so we have a lot going on that people don't necessarily realize. People know us as a large fundraising research organization, but we shifted gears probably around 6 or 7 years ago to do more of this local community impact work. And so I try to, get out there and tell more people so that they know.
Absolutely.
It's not just fundraising. That's the biggest thing. That's a big component of it and necessary. Mm-hmm. But getting involved in the community, again, I think carries so much more weight than just gathering money. And right. I'm not saying that there's a huge place for that. Mm-hmm. Where that funding goes is relevant, but
no, it's one of it's people's amongst people's first question. What are you doing locally?
With the money.
I used to work at the American Cancer Society down in Miami, and it was very similar. What are you doing for our local community? And so I think the American Heart Association is super smart to start doing that more local work. Of course, research
yep.
is extremely important. We have donated the most funding to research outside of the federal government since we started over 100 years ago. But people want to know what's happening here. And it's kind of harder for people to contextualize what research really is and what that means. And so it's, I think, showing them what we're doing locally really kind of just drives the point home. And they think, oh, well, they're not just out here getting money.
Yeah. What's the website people should go to learn more?
Heart.org.
Heart.org. Mm-hmm. I can remember that. That's not
easy.
Yeah. That's
all right.
So HCA Florida, especially here in Northeast Florida Memorial, what's going on there? Any things you're excited about?
Yeah. So we're expanding our footprint. We just opened a freestanding ER up in Yulee, and we'll be opening one down in St. John's County as well. So to really continue our, you know, footprint into the Northeast Florida community. We also do a lot of charity and volunteer work, and we're expanding our programs. We are one of very few ECMO centers, and our ECMO program has really expanded. For those who don't know what that is, that's when you can circulate the blood outside of the patient's body. So when we can't oxygenate or when the heart can't pump. So our ECMO service has expanded by 200% over the past year. So we've really seen some amazing outcomes. Yeah.
Doc, you got a lot to talk about the second half, the clinical side. We got ECMO stuff, CPR.
I'll help you.
We've got 2 or 3 minutes here till the commercial break. We love shout outs. Hi, Mom, I love you. Anyone you want to shout out, thank you for the efforts. Thank you for putting up with me going to work every day. Shout outs.
Yes, I'll start. first, I want to shout out my son. He's 10. His name is Charlie. He thinks I'm a celebrity when I come do these things.
What's up, Charlie?
Charlie.
But also, I want to thank my team. The work that I do is not possible without their commitment to our mission. And so I like to make a joke that they raise the money so I get to spend the money. And I think I have one of the best jobs at the American Heart Association. So
that's wonderful.
I would like to shout out to my son, Daniel. He's 16. He'll probably be mortified when he hears me say this, but all the more reason to do it. And to my love, Paul, thank you for all your support, sweetie.
I love shout outs.
So sweet.
I don't know what else. There's so much to cover. I think second half, we might get a little clinical. I'd like to. Yeah. I like to geek out on that stuff. A lot of talk about the bystander CPR. I think that's important.
Absolutely.
What was I going to say? Goodness gracious, what's the term? AEDs throughout. I think AEDs should be everywhere. Why that's relevant, we'll talk about the conduction in the heart. I think that's cool. But wow, that flew by
quick.
Time flies when you're having fun, you know?
That's what the hell just happened. Welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. Good news is, if you're catching the second half here on the radio show, you can catch the full episode on your favorite podcast platform on YouTube under What the Health Just Happened. Special shout out to my business partner. It's his birthday tomorrow. Don't tell anyone. Who also sponsors this show, 212 Benefits. Thanks for all your contributions. First half, a lot of talk about the First Coast American Heart Association, the Heart Walk, which is on October 4th, 10-4. We had a representative from HCA talk about some clinical stuff, some life stuff, some cool shout outs. The second half, we're still going to talk about the American Heart Association, but we have Dr. Robert Kim, cardiac electrophysiologist. That's a big word.
You got that right.
I got it right?
Yeah, on the first try.
With ASHI Heart and Vascular Practice.
That's correct.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
Before we geek out on some heart stuff, interviewing a cardiac electrophysiologist really gets my heart racing.
Stop.
Or maybe it's just
arrhythmia. I gotta go. I'm leaving.
Or maybe it's just arrhythmia. That's terrible. Is it true cardiologists often become musicians? Apparently, they have a real talent for finding the right beat.
Not to the best of my knowledge.
That's terrible.
I'm having secondhand embarrassment.
I love embarrassing myself. This way, no one else feels embarrassed. So, healthy or not healthy? Remember the game?
Sort of, yeah.
Yes.
It's like test of your
reflex. Round. Healthy or not healthy, doctor's handwriting.
Not healthy. No bueno.
Healthy or not healthy, Zumba classes.
Healthy.
Healthy or not healthy, replacing tobacco with nicotine?
No, not healthy.
Not healthy?
Not healthy at all.
healthy or not healthy walking desks?
Healthy.
Healthy.
Depends. I mean, if you fall off of it.
That's why I'm scared to get those.
I haven't
that's
yet.
That's a neutral.
Healthy or not healthy debt from going to school to become a doctor?
Unhealthy.
Unhealthy.
Is that common?
Well, now more than ever because medical schools are so expensive.
Yeah.
They're coming out with like $500,000 in debt, I think.
Yeah, sometimes.
Easily. Oof, easily.
That's brutal.
Easily.
Healthy or not healthy, the pipeline of physicians in the United States right now?
I think they are, depending on what specialty. But I think for the most part, if I'm speaking in general terms, I think they are.
Healthy or not healthy, bystander CPR?
Healthy.
Healthy.
Okay, let's dive right in. We'll go back to the electrical component of the heart because I think that's very interesting. It's often not recognized. Why is it so important? Why should people understand bystander CPR is a must?
Because, you know, simply it's a lifesaver. And even if you don't know the actual numbers of how many compressions, for example, the idea is to compress the heart, compress the chest. Okay, just it doesn't really matter how many, you know, compressions per minute, whether it's 100 or 50. The correct number is 100, by the way, beats from compressions per minute. Just getting any blood circulating. And what compression also does is it expands and contracts the lungs. So it also gets the air into the lungs. So you don't really need a mouth-to-mouth component per se. But if you do the compression, you're going to accomplish both goals at the same time. So doing a wrong number of compressions per minute is better than not doing
compressions.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And there are roughly 350,000 out of the hospital cardiac arrest each year, and less than 10% of those people survive. And so just having the skill and as he mentioned, jumping in and doing compressions is absolutely better than doing nothing at all.
So when I went through, let's say, medic school, EMT, medic school, nursing school, they taught you the ABCs, right? Airway, breathing, circulation, with an emphasis on make sure the airway's open. Then if they're breathing, that's the mouth-to-mouth component or a BVM. Mm-hmm. Now it's all compressions.
Mm-hmm.
Or an emphasis on compressions.
But I would just want to make sure that the patient is having cardiac arrest and not passed out. So it's really, sometimes you just pass out. It's very important. Sometimes, patients may be unconscious and breathing and with a heartbeat. They may have passed out for a benign reason. But you do want to check the pulse and make sure that it is a full-blown cardiac arrest before you start to compress on that ribcage.
But, and correct me, please, if
great
I'm wrong
point,
on this.
By the way.
Yes.
So apparently they looked at research when it comes to traditional CPR with rescue breaths compared to hands only. In that first, 5 minutes, those compressions are the most important part. And that's a part of, a large part of the reason that they have made bystander CPR recommendation, call 911, and then do the compressions. Of course, if people are medically trained or have CPR certification, we want them to jump in and do mouth to mouth. But that first 5 minutes, those compressions are really the most important part of it.
It's critical to jump in there. And again, the purpose is twofold, is to circulate the blood and get the oxygen into the blood. And by compressing the chest, you're not only compressing the heart, but you're also compressing the lungs. So that is going to act as, so when you let go, the lungs are going to re-expand and the air is going to be able to get in. So you're accomplishing two very important goals.
We talked about earlier exercise and fitness. What's the lowest barrier to entry? So when I look at compressions, anyone can do that, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Trey.
I was just about to ask you, can a child even do compressions?
So as young as nine.
Okay.
Depends on how strong your 8-year-old is, if they've been lifting, no, I'm just kidding. No, 9 is the recommendation or the minimum age. But I will say that there have been cases where kids learned through the kids heart challenge through school that they learned the 2 steps and instructed their parent to do it and actually saved somebody's life at a church because the child was able to tell his mom how to do it because he was not yet strong enough to do it.
I love shout outs too. So our school where our kids go, Providence here in Jacksonville, the kids challenge, is that what it's called?
Kids heart challenge.
Kids heart challenge. That's a big deal at our school, which I love. The kids come home talking about it. They have competitions and stuff, but I don't think there's ever an age too young to start learning about this stuff.
I agree.
You want to geek out for a minute?
Absolutely. That's why I'm here.
Well, first, do you remember that time that I told those terrible dad jokes? Like 5 minutes ago?
Yes, I do. I tried to forget about it, honestly.
I've heard worse before.
So, cardiac electrophysiologist. You got to really dumb it down for Trey and I.
Yes, please.
What does that mean? I mean, I know, but we talked about it.
Right, right. So the way I speak to my patients in clinic is that think of your heart as a house. Your house has a plumbing system, and it's got electrical system. So I'm the electrician. My partners are the plumbers. And quite simply, the heart is a muscular pump. It supplies blood to the rest of the body. So in order for the muscles to work on a beat-by-beat basis, it has to receive a command, has to receive a signal. And that signal comes in the form of electricity. It comes from the impulse. See that picture that you have right there? That is a picture that I have used many times in my talks.
Probably won't come
up,
but
that's actually my heart.
That's
your heart. Yeah.
They took a picture.
That's actually a very good schematic picture of what your conduction system looks like. So right on the top left, you will see a structure labeled sinus node. SA node, sinoatrial node, and that's where the impulse begins. And those green lines are these wires that conduct electricity down to the bottom chamber. And ultimately, it's the bottom chamber, the ventricles, that are contracting to eject blood to the rest of the body. So it plays a very important role. And when those conduction systems go fray or they get, senescent, they get old, you may end up with a condition called the heart block that requires a pacemaker. You may have an arrhythmia within the myocardium, the muscle itself. A lot of different things can happen, but it's basically the electrical wiring. Whoa,
what was that?
Speaking of electricity, that was a lightning bolt just struck.
voltage electricity.
So again, I think it's important to understand the electrical system of the heart without going too far into it. If you want to come back and really nerd out, I'm all
about
it. Where can there be damage to the electrical system? Can it be anywhere? Does it typically happen more in one spot?
So anywhere in the heart is a possibility. So for example, the SA node in an older folks in their 70s and 80s can become senescent. They don't function as well, or they develop scar tissues around it. They have a condition called SA or sinoatrial node block, sinus node dysfunction. So when that happens, the bottom chamber doesn't receive signal in a timely fashion. So the heart rate goes down, the patients feel poor, and then that patient requires a pacemaker. Another example is right in the middle of the heart, you will see a structure called AV node. And there is a green line that goes right below that called His Purkinje. That's another portion of the heart that can be affected with age. When that happens, the electrical impulse either slows down very much through going through that structure, or just stops completely, and that's going to cause something called a heart block. That's another indication for a pacemaker. So a lot of places where things can go wrong.
If you're a patient, we'll say seasoned, I don't like calling them old, right? I'm talking to you, Dad. Someone that's walking like a pedestrian, is there ways, do you feel it in your chest? Like, oh, that doesn't feel right. Is it lightheaded? What are some signs and symptoms? You're like, ooh, that ticker feels a little bit off.
That's right. So a classic symptom of somebody having a heart attack, as all of you guys know, is angina, chest pain. So when these systems fail, because the heart rate will drop precipitously, one of the most common symptoms that the patient will have is lightheadedness. They're going to feel like they're going to pass out, tunnel vision, sweatiness, and it all comes from the fact that the heart rate has all of a sudden gone from 60, 70 beats per minute down to 20 beats or 10 beats per minute. So if you think about the pathophysiology, that one of the first organ to be affected with low level of perfusion is the brain. It's the most sensitive organ. So these guys are going to pass out.
Altered mental status.
They are brought into the hospital. We get an EKG, and lo and behold, they're in complete heart block. So that would be sort of a paradigm example of what a heart block patient would look like.
I love the analogy of think of your heart as a house, right?
Yes.
You got plumbers, you have someone putting the roof on, you're the electrician.
I'm the electrician.
Huge component of the heart, the electricity that flows through it, which I think is a good opportunity to talk about AEDs. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So automated external defibrillators, any school you go to, hospital, mm-hmm. I think they should be everywhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you help explain why they're relevant and how they may help shock the heart back into a normal rhythm?
Right, because time is heart cells. Time is harsher. There's something like every minute delay, there is a 10% less survival, something like that. If you delay the initiation of the CPR, for every minute delay, there's a 10% increase in the mortality. So that's why it's important to, you know, get on these patients as soon as possible. Now, these machines are going to be of little use unless people around them will know how to use it. Mm-hmm. It has to be simple enough to use.
Yep.
Okay, it's daunting enough to see a machine stuck in a wall, in an airport or a shopping mall that you probably have never used before. But add a real situation to that when somebody is down, you really have to, it really has to be simple enough for people without any medical background to be able to use. Otherwise, it's not going mm-hmm. to be. And quite often, most of the time when you put the paddles on, it'll tell you whether that's a shockable rhythm or not, to stand back. And I think it does all that stuff.
And that's one of the major things learning in my role in the last few years. I learned that when you put the pads on, the machine detects the heart rhythm, whether there is one or if it's irregular, and the machine makes the decision whether mm-hmm. they need to be shocked or not. I just thought you put it on there, start pushing buttons, which obviously makes it more scary.
So everyone sees movies where they mm-hmm. rub the paddles and they say, shock! Ridiculous and not realistic.
And whether it's, you know, simple. Simply, the machine is trying to determine whether it's a shockable rhythm or not. Mm-hmm. And the nerdiness part of this, a shockable rhythm is ventricular fibrillation.
VFib.
Yep. Or ventricular tachycardia. There are two other rhythms for which the shock is not indicated. And these two other rhythms are not shockable. And yet, these, if untreated, it can lead to sudden death. And that is, you know, asystole or something called, used to be called EMD. Remember that electromechanical dissociation. Now that's retermed, what's called PEA, pulseless electrical arrest. So that's when the heart has electrical impulses, but mechanically, the muscles are too sick to actually provide a mechanical contraction.
I think this is a good for the American Heart Association too. So training in AEDs, the technology now it's pretty phenomenal, right?
Absolutely.
They're state of the art. They're very simple to use. You open it up and there's basically a crayon drawing of put the pads here.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then it starts yelling at you.
And it will tell you, it says stop compression. Mm-hmm. So again, start the chest compressions. When you stop, it will read the heart rate or the heart rhythm mm-hmm. and say whether it's a shockable rhythm or not.
Yes.
He mentioned it too. Flatline, so a systole, when you see in a movie and it's like beep, and they in a show they say shock, you're like, you're not shocking.
You're
a
not shocking that.
But that's the thing about AEDs. They're very simple to use. Most places have them. Now, if they don't, they should, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. But they are simple to use, and it tells you shockable versus not shockable. But at the end of the day, chest compressions. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when I'm out trying to educate the community, I make sure to mention to people that the survival rate for cardiac arrest when an AED is used in the first minute is significantly higher than that of hands-only CPR. And so 9 out of 10 people, as long as they receive that shock within the first minute, will survive. That drops some as time goes, but it's still significantly, you're still significantly more likely to survive with AED over hands-only CPR. So if you're in a spot where you know for sure there is an AED that's working, absolutely, you're going to want to get that and start doing that. I'm trying to think, what was the other?
Every minute counts.
Every second
counts. It's got to be on there as expeditiously as possible, and it's got to be used the right way.
We had an unfortunate circumstance happen. I believe it was in Tennessee. There was a young man who was 16. Mm-hmm. His name was Matthew Mangione, I believe.
We talked about this last
episode.
I would re-listen to that one too for that story, the Tennessee one.
He went down on the soccer field. There were 5 AED units within his vicinity. Not one made it to him. And so a large part of the work that I do is working with organizations to mm-hmm. develop a cardiac emergency response plan so that not only do they they have an AED, but the people involved know where it's at, are encouraged to use it. Somebody is in charge of maintaining it. And so I like to remind people that having the unit is really only part of the equation. You mentioned earlier, if people are not confident to use it, they're going to kind of freeze up and not.
It's wall art. Right. If you don't if you don't use it, it's wall art.
It's wall art. Basically.
And about I think it's something like only half of people know where the AED is at their job.
Do you know where the AED is at your kid's school?
No.
Do you know what an AED is?
I do because you've talked about it. But as a testimony as your average Joe, I'd have no idea.
Exactly.
Just being honest. That's
kind of like, do you know where your fire extinguisher is at your home?
That's the effort that I think the American, that's one of the many things the American Heart Association is trying to put an emphasis on. What about you, Joe? You know where they are at our school? The AEDs?
No, but I bet the nurses do.
The who?
The nurses.
Oh, the nurses.
What if it's the nurse having the cardiac arrest? Then what?
That's again, low.
I actually think I do know where they are.
Yeah, you'd recognize them. But
we,
if you don't.
We put together with organizations as a part of what we call CERP or Cardiac Emergency Response Planning is they put together a team of four or five people who are responsible to act in an emergency so that, you know, in the event something happens, people kind of know what's going on and how to jump in and help.
So we went earlier, we talked about what are some changes. How long have you been a cardiologist?
I finished my training in 2008, so 17 years.
I have a three-page CV of yours, by the way, which I do want to go to. I got a lot of published publications that are, I think, interesting. I don't know if Joey would, but what changes have you seen in the last decade plus? That's like, wow, that's fascinating. We can do that now, or that's easier
to
do.
I think, as Anna said, I think the biggest change for the positive is at the technology sector. And we're doing things that we never thought was possible that we could do, you know, 10, 15 years ago. The instrumentations have gotten better. I think the safety of these procedures have gotten much better as a result. But you know, all in all, it's technology, I think, by far.
Is there something you see coming in the future that excites you? I immediately go to artificial intelligence, but that's like, that's a whole can of conversation. Is there anything like that's right around the corner and that's going to make a huge difference?
You know, I can best speak for the specialty that I'm in right now, which is we see a lot of condition called atrial fibrillation. So one of the things that's coming down the pike, it actually has come down the pike already, and they're trying to sort of expand and gain foothold and market share, is a novel technology called pulse field ablation, which is it's a non-traditional way to actually destroy your heart tissues in the way of treating atrial fibrillation. So
healthy way of killing heart
it's a way of getting rid of the abnormal cells without a thermal component. So it's the thermal component that causes collateral damage to adjacent structures. So by using a concept called electroporation, it's a very targeted, it's a smart bullet to destroy just the tissue that is necessary and not have any negative impact on the outer or surrounding structures. Yeah, so that's one of the new. So technology is great. They're expensive, but they're great.
There's a cost to it.
Oh, yes, there is.
Is it worth it? I think if you're having some heart issues, you might say it's worth it.
I was still trying to figure that out, right, Donna? It's worth it.
I do want to say this again, Dr. Robert Kim, you're with ASHI Heart and Vascular Practice.
Yes, that is. We're not part of the hospital yet. We are work very closely with HCA Memorial Hospital. And I take nearly all of my patients there for care, for any type of procedures, any type of admission that I feel that the patient needs goes. And we are literally right across the street. We're very close proximity-wise. Across the street and one block over.
Yeah.
So we work very closely with the hospital. We are a relatively small group. We have, I think the last count was 7 cardiologists. Mm-hmm. I'm the only electrophysiologist in that group. So I support all my partners when any of their patients have electrical issues.
So they're the plumbers.
That's right.
Exactly. And if you look around there in any given practice, there will be, in general, more plumbers than there are electricians. Not sure why. I think there's the plumbing problems are more frequent and more prevalent. So there are more plumbers than there are electricians.
And we need electricians too, though.
But the eye support, we do need electricians too. So, yeah.
We got, again, a couple minutes here left. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to add you're excited about? Don't forget the Heart Walk, 10-4, October 4th.
Mm-hmm. Read my mind.
Right.
We got a couple minutes. Anything you want to add? We missed. That's the time flies.
Go ahead, Trey.
All right. So, technology's gotten more advanced, but also your patients—they probably get to go down rabbit holes because of technology. Are patients easier nowadays to work with than maybe 20, 30 years ago? Are they? Do they come in with more opinions nowadays?
I guess it would be probably not.
Yeah. Just curious. Yeah.
I mean, that's. I think it depends on the. The patient population group that you're talking about. What happens is that as the technology becomes more focused, 30 years ago, there was really the field of electrophysiology within the cardiology that was just beginning. So what I see is that as we delve deeper into a specific subspecialty, for example, A patient, when they come to a cardiologist, has six or seven different subspecialties underneath. For example, I am in electrophysiology, but I can't really be an expert in what a plumbers do, what a structural heart specialist do, doctors who manage congestive heart failure or congenital heart disease, we're all subspecialized. That does make it a little bit inconvenient for the patient. Because even though it's the same organ, they sometimes have to see three or four different subspecialists. So I'm not, I don't know the latest and the greatest in hypertension and blood pressure management, which, by the way, absolutely incredibly important for prevention of heart disease. Mm-hmm. I'm just not going to be good at it. So I, turf it to one of my partners who does have interest. So it makes the care a little bit more, I guess I hate to use the word inconvenient, but that's just the way things are. So we have traded away the convenience aspect of it and gotten the sort of the technology and the knowledge aspect of it.
I'd say that's a good thing overall, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But Dr. Google, man, I don't know. This patient.
Yeah, I'm like, by the time they get to him, they've given up on Google.
Good point.
One last plug and shout out for First Coast American Heart Association. You got anything you want to add?
Just to join us on Saturday, October 4th, 10-4.
10-4.
And to definitely learn more about hands-only CPR at heart.org/CPR.
Love it. Jesse Rausch, VP of Health Strategies with First Coast American Heart Association. Dr. Robert Kim, cardiac electrophysiologist with ASHI Heart and Vascular Practice. And Donna Wagner, VP of Critical Care, Neurovascular and Cardiovascular Care. That's a mouthful. Thank you for joining us. That's what the hell just happened.